Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, welcome to Redmen TV and welcome to the final word. Liverpool beating Aston Villa by 2-1. Once again, backed by The Athletic. As a Redmen TV viewer, subscriber or listener, you're entitled to a 50% off your yearly subscription and a 30-day free trial. It's about £2.50 a month. Head over to theathletic.co.uk/RedmenTV. Loads of great writers, David Ornstein, James Pearce, Si Hughes, Ralph Harrigstein, loads more. Good in-depth written stuff on there, isn't there, Ben?
There is.
Yeah, go and check it out. first of all, is everyone okay?
Mate... That was so good.
I felt sick. I felt sick for a good few hours after that game. I had to travel back, obviously, and I was still shaking. I went for a pint after it, and I couldn't contain myself. I didn't know whether to stand up, sit down, get pints, get a gin. I don't know. I didn't know what to do. It was honestly fantastic.
I found myself hours later just checking score going, oh, yeah, that does happen, didn't it? Yeah. As always, with Liverpool and the VAR, there's lots to get through. First of all, the starting lineup. Ben, I'll come to you first. Adam Lallana, the big question of this weekend was, do you risk Fabinho? Do you leave him out? Obviously, be City at the weekend, the yellow card. Were you happy with him starting? Were you all right with it?
I was okay with it. I mean, I wanted Fabinho to start because I feel like obviously it doesn't matter now. It's not my opinion, but I thought we were just going to take things a game at a time, you know, and it was a game where, look, Fabinho wasn't injured. He's a professional. I feel like he could have got through that game without picking up a booking. Whether Villa would have tried to target him, whether that would have been part of their game plan, I don't really understand why they would have done that. But either way, Klopp made the decision to take him out and play Lallana there. And to be honest, when I saw the midfield, I didn't know who was going to be playing six. It could have been any one of them. I thought
they seemed to rotate it quite a bit.
And I think that was probably part of the plan. I think these are the type of situations why he's, you know, coaching Lallana to play a bit of that role. It's why he did it against Arsenal. You know, there'll be games where we probably need him to plug that gap a couple of times this season, especially in the, you know, if we go further in the cup again. You know, you've got the FA Cup on the horizon after Christmas and all that. So, you know, initially, as I say, I saw the midfield, and to be honest, I just naturally assumed Henderson because I did. But obviously, it was mainly Lallana, a bit of all three. But, you know, in the end, I suppose it didn't really matter, and we've got Fabinho for the weekend, so, you know.
Yeah, it's all about having a squad now, isn't it? Ben mentions all the games that we've got coming up. It's about using the squad and using that rotation, training Lallana up for that position. What did you think? What did you make of his performance? I thought it was all right. And I was quite surprised as well, because obviously when you put the team sheet out on Twitter, everyone goes, fucking Lallana. It was actually all right. I was like, no one's kicking off here.
He played it well. He played it exactly like Fabinho did positional-wise. I mean, obviously he doesn't have the exact range of passing that Fabinho has that we've come to love in terms of the straight balls over the top and just the all-round pace of Fabinho's game. His one-touch play is fantastic. But in terms of picking up the ball and getting into areas where you need to be to stop them breaking a lot of time, I thought he was brilliant. The way that he just found himself on the edge, picked it up, spread the play again, and we started again. And that's a massive feature of our game. And in terms of, like, even with the throw-ins and stuff, you knew exactly where to be. That's what you need. You just need someone who can be solid in that position, know what the role is in that, and know where they need to be in terms of how they're going to help the centre-halves and pushing on throughout the midfield. I think it's interesting because obviously that means that Henderson and Gini just do that role too well, if that makes sense, in terms of you need two people who are solid. I don't think they were fantastic when for a large part of the game. Obviously, they step it up later on, but it tells you a lot about what Klopp thinks about them in them positions as well. He doesn't want anyone else in there to start the game.
Yeah, do you think that affected the fluidity of the midfield? Because I thought they were pretty passive in the first half. We all expect Hendo and Gini to do the pressing and the work rate to be good, but I kind of thought they were kind of exposed at times, whether that's a confusion about having Fabinho there who does such a good job and expecting Lallana to fill that in. But they still were pretty passive in the first half.
Possibly. I think it's difficult because obviously we know Fabinho is one of the world's best, if not the world's best in his position. And obviously going into the game, my only doubt about Lallana was obviously when he has played in the six. You look at the Arsenal game, we've leaked a lot of goals and he doesn't, in terms of positioning, obviously he's not a natural six, so he doesn't tend to hold his position well. But I think against Villa he did. Obviously Villa had a lot more chances than we usually used to with Fabinho in that position. But as I say, it's very difficult to replace him with one man because he is one of the best in the world for what he does. And I think for that reason, looking at the midfield three in terms of fluidity, I think Klopp obviously had that in mind where actually if we're not playing Fabinho, we need three players who can play in that position. So if it doesn't work, we're able to rotate it. And I think quite probably that did affect the fluidity of the midfield going forwards. But I think defensively, it was probably the best thing to do from Klopp.
Yeah, and the other people that started, which we kind of had question marks over, Ben, obviously Salah was the big one. Obviously, he's found out that he hadn't been training. It turns out he'd had the fluid being drained from his ankle in the week. I thought he was really poor, but I completely forgot that was a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, is it worth pushing and risking him again? We've got Genk tomorrow, we've got Man City at the weekend.
I struggled to see, you know, he's not getting in the game at all. And he's clearly struggling a bit. And I think that's fair enough, you know, with his ankle injury and what have you. But, you know, again, he just didn't... Okay, he didn't score, but I kind of forgot he was playing at times. Obviously, he has the opportunity in the first half where Van Dijk plays over the top and, you know, he gets a half-decent effort away. But other than that, like, to be dragged off at half an hour to go was Mo Salah, you know. And again, it's managing the injury. I know it's probably not all completely performance-related, but I would definitely rest him tomorrow night. And I'm sure we'll discuss that when we do the match build-up show and whoever does the starting 11, you know, that'll be a question that's thrown up. But with City at the weekend, you need him to have some kind of half-decent game against them. And I think tomorrow night, it's a game that we should be winning. We're at home. We're in a comfortable position in the group. I would rotate him. I think he's struggling a bit.
It's a big call to make, isn't it? Because I think when we played Genk away, he wasn't like firing all cylinders, but I remember obviously Alan Kennedy did the post-match stuff and he's like, you don't take someone off who gets your goals. And I remember thinking, like, you know, he's been poor, do you take him off or is he just going to pop up? Because we needed that goal. But like, we'll come on to the substitutions obviously later on, but like Ben says, he gets taken off for half an hour to go. It's a bold call, that.
It is a bold call, but it worked. You saw it worked. Shifting Mane over to that right-hand side was fantastic. And we tasked Trent a lot of the time with beating that fullback by himself, and Salah was in the box and we were expecting a cross into the box from Trent all the time, and Salah wasn't really helping out with that, with the doubling up. As soon as he comes off, Mane switches over to the right hand side, we start doubling up and we start getting space on that side, and that's how Mane gets the space to put the cross in for Robbo, and we just seemed a lot more fluid on that side, and instead of going Trent do everything. Obviously, I saw a lot of it. Trent was right next to me second half. You could see he had to stand up as man, and it just didn't work. And then once we got that extra man, like I speak about, we were able to spread the ball out. Everything was starting to come down that right-hand side, and it just looked loads better. I think, look, Salah's fantastic. He will come good again. It must be so hard to know that you're not at your full capacity as well with your ankle. It must be tough for him.
Once you get the mindset of the game as well, I don't know if anyone else is the same as me. Yeah. I completely forgot that he was, you know, he hadn't had that training and stuff like that. Yeah. So like, you get more frustrated with him going, like, what are you doing? So
I think as well, the reasoning behind it is, obviously, Salah has that to deal with, but it's like you say, referring to the Alan Kennedy thing, you don't take off a natural goal scorer, probably our most natural goal scorer, but then actually, if you look at the minute, we have so many players that we can turn to for, like, if we're struggling in the last minute, people just pop up.
Yeah.
You look at Lallana against United, you've got Robertson against Villa, you've got players coming from anywhere just popping up and scoring goals. And maybe a few months ago, it would be like, oh, we need Salah on the pitch because we need a goal. But now we can turn to anyone. The whole squad is capable of coming off the bench and scoring a goal, even players on the pitch. You obviously had Henderson against Tottenham as well. And I just think at the minute we're in a position where the morale is so high in the squad that we don't need to rely on Salah for goals all the time to keep him on the pitch, because absolutely anyone in the team can score for us at the moment.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's not necessarily Salah at the moment that I revert to when I think we need a goal anyway. I think it's probably Mane, and obviously Mane gets the winner. But when I think about, when I instinctively think, okay, who's going to save us here, if you want, it's not necessarily Salah at the moment. And I don't know, you know, that's just agreeing with what you're saying, in the sense of there are so many players who can do it. You know, obviously Origi gets the equaliser, a couple of goals in the week against Arsenal. But like, at the moment, like in 17-18, it was Salah was scoring every week and Salah's going to win us the game and all this. Right now, it's not, and that's totally okay, because, you know, when he isn't playing well, that means that other players are covering for him.
But he does occupy two defenders
every time. He's dangerous. You can't take your eye off him. You give him an opportunity in the box, he will more often than not tuck it away. People just aren't giving him an opportunity, and it's opening space for Mane, like we're speaking about. It's opening up space for people on the edge of the box. Oxlade-Chamberlain comes on and starts shooting for the first time, and players like that, where we have danger in other areas. You're exactly right.
I think Salah got frustrated in the end of the day because he just resorted into absolutely just twatting one. He absolutely miscued it and messed up. The final person that obviously started that game, which I had a question mark over, Ben, was Dejan Lovren. I think beforehand, you know, people still have a Dejan Lovren agenda, which I'll get to in a minute, Tom.
I'm just thinking, they don't want
him anywhere near the side. And obviously, Joe Gomez played obviously against Arsenal last week, and he's coming back up to speed and stuff. Are you, whether his third or fourth choice is a bit irrelevant, but when you see his name on the team sheet, what's your first reaction?
Well, my first reaction at the weekend was, well, I'm not actually surprised by that. I expect him to play. But then it's, I don't know, because I like Joe Gomez, but I'm not seeing what Klopp sees every single day. I think Gomez, you know, he struggled in the Salzburg game. He came on against Genk and struggled a little bit. So, you know, I think the conclusion is that position is clearly up for grabs when Matip isn't there. And at the moment, Lovren is winning that battle. And we have to go with the manager in that sense. Because it shouldn't necessarily be a God-given right that Joe Gomez gets that spot when Matip isn't there, or Matip gets that spot when he's fit again. You know,
it's healthy competition, isn't it?
Yeah, if Gomez or Lovren do step up and they can put a consistent run of performances in, like we saw with Matip last season when we all expected Joe Gomez to just walk back into the side, then that's, you know, that then they deserve that role. And I think that's clearly the one position in the whole of the team, the starting 11 right now, that is a little bit uncertain. You know, when you think about the midfield, you pretty know what the midfield's going to be more often than not. The front three sorted, the other four in the back five are settled. It's just that other centre back role when Matip isn't around. But yeah, when I see Lovren there, I don't necessarily roll my eyes. I just think, well, they're the options we've got then. So
comes back to squad depth, doesn't it? Tom, you went to the game. We had a discussion in the office upstairs before. You weren't totally convinced.
I thought it was terrible. I thought he was genuinely awful. And then I had to talk with you, and you was like, no, he was really good. And then I looked at the stats, and I got it completely wrong. But it's weird, because maybe it's tainted. There was a time, I think it was second half, where he plays a straight ball over the top to no one, and we're all in the ground, frustrated. We're getting sang at by Villa fans, and we're thinking, come on, like, that's a wasted opportunity. The players are shouting at him, just going, pass us the ball. Henderson's there, Van Dijk's there.
Simple things, isn't it?
Simple, just do it. Just keep it going, keep the ball. Everyone was fuming with him, so maybe that tainted my opinion of him. But I thought Wesley dominated him. Every time the ball went to him, I thought Wesley dominated him. And it turns out I got it wrong. But it always seemed like he didn't win the header. I don't know.
He's often targeted, isn't he? Because I think
by target man he is.
Yeah, by big boats. So, like, I think it happened...
It was Man United a couple of years ago at Old Trafford.
But was he not...
played long ball to Lukaku, and Rashford scored twice.
Yeah.
And they both came from long balls, flicked on, goal. And every time...
Kane did it again when we played Spurs.
Yeah.
And we had Fabinho to drop deep. So we recognised the threat and just dropped Fabinho on. And Fabinho was winning those headers.
The problem is, Wesley's a unit. He's massive. And he's strong. He's fast. He's everything you want in a centre forward for our Villa play. And Gomez wouldn't have done any better than Lovren.
Yeah.
But then Lovren had a good game.
That's
what I mean. That's the mad thing to me. I can't wrap my head around the fact that he actually did have a good game. When I honestly thought Wesley completely ruined him, to be honest with you. But I mean, I'm really interested to know people's thoughts in the comments and stuff, because Surely I'm not the only one who thought Wesley dominated them. Surely
yeah. I'm not saying Dejan Lovren was the best player on the pitch by any stretch of the imagination, yeah. But I think when you have preconceptions of him, you don't want him near the pitch and stuff like that. Again, like Ben says, when it comes to squad depth.
He's a good player.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, but he's not going to be Matip, he's not going to be Joe Gomez because, you know, he's been around Liverpool for years. You know, we've developed our squad on from then. Jack, we're going to get onto the goals. Their goal, they'd already come close earlier on within like the first 30 seconds and stuff like that. For me, the two free kicks were a bit, not soft in the sense of that they shouldn't be free kicks, but just a bit stupid tackles from Manny to get the ball away in the first place.
I don't think we were lined up properly. I've watched it a few times and you can see right up to when Villa are taking the free kick, Van Dijk shouting at Firmino to get in position. And I think Henderson behind him, Van Dijk's not noticed, but Henderson behind him is just asleep. He's in the middle of two Villa men and he's just fast asleep. And Trezeguet runs from he's the deepest Villa man in that line, runs deep, just completely through Henderson, and Henderson misses him. But it's like you say, it's a daft foul to give away in the first place. I think
it was two in quick succession.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it was very naive of us in terms of positioning. I think we're quite asleep. As I say, Firmino being bollocked by Van Dijk to get into position, and he doesn't see Henderson's not in the right position either. But it was just one of them where I think it was just poor defending and.
What do we make of this high line? Because I think we do it every game.
Yeah.
VAR has not come to our rescue. VAR's
it's spot on.
Done its job in that sense.
It works.
Well, I'm surprised more people haven't made more of that. Like,
I was just going to say, West Ham did it last season,
didn't they? And they
scored from one and had another big opportunity from another. And I'm surprised more teams don't do this. And whether it's clearly a very, very difficult thing to properly judge that run to the most effective thing. And I think that, you know, it's probably underrated by us. Well, just run from deep and it'll be fine.
It's
never that simple, no. But I think there was an interesting tweet from somebody after the Ghent game away where they were saying Liverpool look more defensively fragile because they play the offside trap and play it well. So because it looks as if teams get in every single time, but they're offside. Liverpool are defending very well. They're just defending a very incredibly good offside trap. Okay, it's going to catch you once every now and then. But if you catch 98 out of 100 offside, and
Alisson still has a chance to save it at the end of the day,
then you're not going to. That's not a bad ratio, is it?
That's the thing. I think at times it's easy to look at the TV or look when you're in the ground and think, oh, that shit, that defensively. But then when you actually see, the flag goes up every time because actually we're playing that line so well that it's such a hard thing to do to play the high line. It's like you say, so for us, it's like, oh, maybe teams can make the most of that more. But actually, it's so difficult to do it in the first place.
Because we move at the right, exact right time as well. Because obviously, if you run from deep, you've got to time it to the point where you are literally running past the defenders exactly at the moment the ball is played, because as soon as the ball is played, the defenders will begin to move in. So if you've missed time, if you've gone too early, you're going to be offside. But if you've gone too late, then you're not going to win the header because they're going to be back there with you. So it's such a difficult thing to judge.
The problem for me is they did that routine a few times where they overload the back stick and we didn't change for it.
But it's back to discipline, isn't it? You've got to believe in yourself. It must be so hard for the Liverpool players not to second guess themselves and go, oh, I'll just make sure I drop in deep here. But you can't afford to do that because you're going to give them a goal.
No, of course. But I think we should be defending that better. People should be talking and going, get an extra man on the back stick. Why is the two men free behind Henderson? Why is that a thing? It shouldn't be happening. Why is there an overload? And I remember it happening at least twice. That one was one of them, and then they had another one. I was thinking, you've already seen this happen, lads. We've conceded from it. Sort it out. But I mean, at the end of it didn't matter. We did sort it out, I guess. But you want to be a bit more proactive on the pitch, which we have been all season long, to be fair. But
speaking of proactive, Tom, we did have the ball in the back of the net. This is what we've all been waiting for to get to talk to. Boy, Firmino scored a legitimate goal.
Sadio Mane's ball is fantastic, by the way.
It's a great goal. It's a great goal.
Absolutely brilliant.
I've had that Ben first. I know we discuss VAR pretty much every week on the Around the League podcast.
Yeah,
It's not just a goal. I've said this upstairs before. It's all the fallout afterwards of not just Liverpool decisions, but decisions of other teams and stuff like that. Of every pundit, everyone that analyses the games, people getting these decisions wrong. The only people that are getting them wrong are the people that are in charge. And there's been loads of fallout of people saying get rid of VAR. I actually think we just need to just get rid of the people that are running it because they're clearly not good enough to do the job.
It needs to be an entirely separate team of people running the VAR to the referees. You can't. It needs to be so not Premier League referees, but people who are trained to the same standard who don't have to referee games. For me, it needs to be an entirely separate group of people, because we've had the discussion already on the Rival League show, and we're going to do it again this week. Unfortunately, I'm sick of talking about it, but they all know each other, and they're all mates, and they're all in the know, and they've probably all got the little WhatsApp groups, and they're laughing. And, oh, you know what
I mean? Do you think there's a hierarchy thing in there as well? Because much of they actually were really good last night, and they kind of picked out Anthony Taylor, Martin Atkinson, and might have been John Moss, of like all the things that they've done wrong just this weekend.
Yeah,
and it's about four or five things
they were saying, because Martin Atkinson was on our VAR, and then wasn't Anthony Taylor on the Everton VAR yesterday, and it was kind of swapped around and all this. So potentially there's something like that. But for me, that's what I mean. So to get rid of all of that, to get rid of the, if there's egos involved or whatever, look, I don't know the referees personally. Nobody does. I'm sure they're all relatively all right guys.
No.
I'm just saying.
They're not.
John Moss definitely isn't.
Yeah. They're not. I think, fuck off John Moss, fuck off Martin Atkinson, fuck off Anthony Taylor. I guess what you say, the element of that of getting some independent people in, train people up to do VAR now in a few months' time to get them in, because the amount of mistakes that they're making, Klopp said at the end of the game, it's not funny because you're costing people points and their jobs at the end of the day.
How lucky are we that didn't cost us?
Yeah, but the people don't lose their jobs. Yeah. Are the referees that are running the thing and making mistakes? If you made five mistakes in your job, over a weekend.
That cost a lot of money. Like, that cost a lot of money for people.
Well, hold on a minute, Ben. Like, you're on a discipline, you're on whatever else. Yeah, they don't answer to anyone.
No.
And
well, the problem is the accountability, because I don't know. I know Martin Atkinson was the head of it. Who are the other people in there? I want to know names. Give me the names of these people. No, but genuinely, show me the names. I want to know who's running all of this. There's got to be accountability there. I want to know who's doing exactly what thing in there, because I don't know. And you need to know this for every game, because you've got to... I know referees don't have the accountability, but they should. They should be. That's why the mics would be fantastic, because then you know exactly what gets said.
Did anybody watch the World Cup
on
at the weekend? Did we all?
I didn't jump on that bandwagon, Ben.
But the way they're using TMO with the communication, you hear exactly everything what's going on. I'm not jumping on a bandwagon at all. I'm talking about how something is utilized. Something is utilized really, really well.
Did you follow English rugby?
Not at all, but I was like, well,
you saw the quarterfinals, semi-finals, or final.
I woke up and I saw that there was a big event going on Twitter, and I thought, I want to be involved in that. Yeah. So
you don't jump on bandwagons, but you watch the final.
I downloaded the ITV Hub specially, so
just for the final.
Yeah, just
okay.
For the final.
So not bandwagon jumping at all. Then.
Well, no, because my thought was specifically, I wonder how they tackle VAR in this. It was research for around the league. But for me, why aren't they using the screens? Like, you know, that one there, you know, and the thing is, there's the technology at play that there's already been...
Going to the screens.
Okay, you know, who was the referee in our game?
John Moss.
Okay, yeah. So why isn't John Moss looking at that? For me, was it John Moss? I can't remember.
It was John
Moss. I don't think it necessarily matters.
I distinctly remember someone calling John Moss a fat prick in the crowd. So,
it was.
The technology that they're using, they've already admitted essentially the frame rates are behind. So what they're seeing isn't necessarily accurate anyway. The actual picture that we've all seen now, where he's drawing the lines, is not parallel with where Firmino is. The vision's skewed. He can't see. Firmino looks ahead anyway, and then he's drawing lines that, you know, Chris Kamara rightly says they're not completely straight. They're thick lines to make it look, and it's like it just looks a bit like you're like arts and crafts at school.
It's amateur. My first VAR.
It does look like that, and you're like, well, what's the point? And for me, I tweeted at the time, I'm convinced that if the linesman hadn't flagged, it was that tight,
would have been a goal.
The goal would have been given because they'd have just gone with the on-field decision because it is that close, and that then undermines the concept of, well, the offside should be binary, it is or it isn't.
Well, that's what annoyed me. There was the handball later on. They're the things VAR has been getting right. They've been getting them spot on. The offsides have been getting spot on. Even the Sterling one with the armpits, I think they got spot on. They got the armpit one wrong with Firmino on the weekend. The handball one, if Mane's isn't a goal the other week against Leicester, was that Man United when it comes off his arm? If that's not a goal, which I think's right, I think it's a handball leading to a goal, fair enough. But if that's not a handball in the box, yes, he's close, but he comes out in an unnatural position like that.
I think this isn't just Liverpool, by the way. This is VR in general. This weekend has just been terrible. Sums it all up when Andy fucking Gray is going.
I know, yeah.
That's a legitimate goal. Yeah. I don't want to assume that all referees are wankers, Ben, as you mentioned there. But, Jack, you do a bit of refereeing, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Right, so they came out and explained.
Exhibit A.
They came out and explained the fact that... it was handball by, we went to the armpit because you can score with that. But Steele made a great point. Like, if you score with your armpit, it's fucking handball, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And, the thing is, to score with your armpit, your arm has to be in an unnatural position of that. Having it up there. So therefore, if you were to do that, refs are more likely to go, no, that's not a goal because your arm's in the air, so it must have come off your arm. I think, for me, I wanted VAR in the Premier League. I thought it would be good. I thought it would cut out a lot of things. I think the screens off the pitch were a fantastic idea. But there was always this part in my head where referees aren't going to overrule referees. They're all professionals. And if you have someone like Anthony Taylor or Michael Oliver, who are meant to be the best referees in the Premier League, you're not going to get the likes of Kavanagh, Tierney, overruling them in the VAR box. You're just not going to get it. And
quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The thing they keep bringing you to is this clear and obvious thing. Now for
me, that off as well.
Well, for me, there's one thing that's clear and obvious, and it's clear and obviously shite. The whole system is clear and obviously shite, and there is nothing else.
But I don't think the system is shite. I think the people that are in charge of it, they're shit.
I think it's a bit of both. I think they're not using the system correctly, and I think in other leagues it's working. It's just this league, it's not. I think
I don't understand.
I don't get it. I think
in other leagues you go to the TV screen.
Yeah,
I don't understand why they can't just sort it out. Like, we're 11 weeks in. I don't understand why they can't just go, well, this clearly isn't working. Why aren't they having a meeting right now?
Exactly.
And sitting down going, this isn't working. Okay, well, for next weekend, we're just going to do this, this, and this. And then I don't understand. Why can't there be communication? Why can't we hear what's going on? Why can't they use the screens?
What's stopping them at this point?
We need a statement.
In the Everton game yesterday, they weren't using the screens on the telly to tell people what was going on.
Which is even worse.
The thing is, as well, they've got this problem where they don't like saying we're wrong. And you need to do that in life. And I think they've come into the season, understandably, no one's known how VAR is going to go. A lot of people have gone, oh, let's stick Milivojevic in our fantasy team because we're going to get loads more penalties in the Premier League. But actually, I think they've gone, no, we're going to avoid this, we're going to avoid that. But they've actually ended up fucking it all about. And actually now they need to come in and go, look, we were wrong at the start of the season, so maybe we are going to be a bit inconsistent now. But from now on, for the rest of the season, this is how we're going to do. Because they've started the season with VAR being shit, and it has been shit, and everyone's noticing that. And everyone's gone, actually, you're not overruling people when it comes to penalties. So then last week, they overruled every penalty decision that was 50-50. And I think they're listening too much to other people rather than actually getting it 100% right. And that's what they need to do. They need to sort it all out, because at the minute it's a disgrace and it's making a mockery of the best league in the world.
Yeah. Tom, I'm just
enjoying the conversation.
But you were there at the game and stuff, and obviously, again, that's another issue that we're having with it. I know obviously we won't go in depth on it now, but you don't know what's going on when you're in a stadium.
It's funny, I was chatting to the lad next to me and it was flagged for offside. And then we had to, because we just waited for their goal to be given. So they basically had to wait a minute and a half.
Well, they pissed off as well.
They were pissed off at it because they had to wait a minute and a half and everyone knew it was onside. We all knew it was onside. And it gave them another opportunity to celebrate, which pissed me off even more so than anything else. And then obviously it got flagged for offside and we were just like, all right, we're fine with that. It got flagged. At the time, we were just like, just get on with the game. I don't care. It would have been nice if it was given. We were going to celebrate it. But again, it gave them another opportunity to celebrate. They got to celebrate like four times in the space of however many minutes for one goal and us getting it disallowed. It did get, to be fair to the system with it, before the game, it was weird. They put a video on and detailed every single instance where VAR is going to get used. They had it on a big screen and told the four instances when it's getting used. I don't know if it went in Paul's vlog, but it was there. And I was like, oh, that's mad. And then they communicated it well to us, to be fair. You knew what was going on. You knew what was getting checked. You knew everything that was going on. Yes, it took a bit of time, but it was fine. I don't mind VAR. I mean, we went to the Arsenal game and a lot of people are saying, oh, I enjoyed it so much better because when the ball went into the goal, it was a goal. And I was like, well, no. And everyone's saying, oh, everything evens out at the end of the day because we scored, we got a penalty that wasn't a pen or blah, blah, blah. But no, their goal was offside, their first goal, Arsenal's. Ours was maybe a dive, but it was contact, who knows. It probably wasn't going to get given. That's evening it out fairly. I don't want evening it out unfairly, because that's bollocks. Tom, offside, it's offside. VAR works in them situations. It's just sad my argument is now undermined, because VAR didn't fucking work for you know, and it didn't work in the handball. Why is that not working?
VAR worked in the sense of the systems that put in place to show what's going on. It's the people that, again, that are in charge of it. Yeah. That's the thing that's not working.
Do you not think that was a brilliant PR stunt as well, by not putting VAR in the Carabao Cup, so when actually things go wrong, you can say, oh, that's because it got no fucking VAR? Because actually,
there's different rules as well for the Champions League VAR as well.
It's ridiculous.
The Champions League VAR is working a whole lot better.
Oh, I was completely about that.
Exactly, yeah. And people aren't communicating. It's like you said, they're not communicating with us and they're not communicating with each other, because VAR should be something that is used the same across the whole of Europe. Because then when we're playing in games in the Champions League and we're seeing something given, like the Napoli penalty that they got against us, which is absolutely ridiculous and probably wouldn't be given in the Premier League. But it just shows, if you communicate and talk about it, then we'd actually have a consistent VAR across the whole of Europe.
And they get a bit more respect from fans, I suppose.
Exactly.
I know I've called Martin X and John Moss. And
sick at all, Martin Ross.
Because
I'm sick at all.
Okay, well, you'll love this next bit. Sadio Mane was booked for diving. Went to VAR as well.
He got kicked.
It wasn't a foul, but I don't think it was a dive.
Was it a foul outside the box?
No, I don't think he got kicked. Soft.
I think he got kicked, but he makes the most of it, which I think is why he gets booked. He looks like
he jumps
shots.
Like a...
But again, coming back to VAR, Brighton got a penalty against Everton for something that's pretty similar, which was just a coming together.
Well, Salah gets pulled back later on in the game, and he doesn't go down.
But that
matters. I think the reason Mane's going down is because he knows that if he doesn't go down, nothing's going to get given. Mm. He got kicked in the fucking ankle in the box. Yeah, all right, go down better, Sadio. Go down when a point of contact and without putting your legs.
But it was an awkward one, wasn't it? Because he kind of like rolled on his leg, couldn't he?
Yeah,
and then he kind of jumps back.
If Salah gets pulled back and doesn't go down, we're all screaming for it, but the ref doesn't give it because he doesn't go down. That's impeding his movement. It happened, David Luiz did it when we played Chelsea, and Salah didn't go down, but the ref went, that's a pullback, come on.
I think for me, I mean, I've pissed a lot of Villa fans off this weekend, and one of the reasons is because of this. And for me and Liam have had this discussion a lot this weekend. It isn't a dive. There is contact, therefore it cannot be a dive. I looked more into the dive law because I was that sure. And it's about conning a referee. And apparently, according to Liam, with Mane's, how he's fallen to ground, which in my opinion was theatrical, Liam says that is conning the referee. Now, for me, there are two forms of contact on Sadio Mane. You have the initial kick on the heel, and then you have the push in the back. And I think Mane has felt both bits of contact and gone to ground. I think he has not dived whatsoever. And look, this is me being biased, probably.
He has dived,
this is me being biased. I think he's gone down to get a penalty.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he knows in his mind that VAR is shocking and that actually when there's contact and you go down, you probably will get a penalty.
Yeah.
So I think he's done that. And I think Mane will probably come out himself and say, yeah, I did go down very easily. But in terms of looking at dives, no. You saw Deulofeu in the Watford game get a penalty for exactly the same, just straight after the game. Mm. And it's that consistency thing again where I am a referee where I'm going, actually, that's not a dive, when everyone else is telling me it's a dive. But actually, I am so at the minute where I'm going, look at that, that's not a dive, so how is that a dive? And you can't...
So should there be an instance with like that, and again like the Everton-Brighton one, where it's not a penalty, it's not a dive, and just play on? It's just a collision.
Literally, I think they've ruined this whole dive thing, because you look at Daniel James for United, where he is literally jumping all over the place and getting booked quite rightly. But then, don't get me wrong, Mane has thrown himself to the ground, but there is contact. And actually, we are told week in, week out by the likes of Alan Shearer that when there's contact, you have a right to do that when it's Harry Kane doing it. But when as soon as Mane does it, apparently he's not allowed to do it. But, you know, I remember when Kane did it, when Tottenham got two penalties against us a couple of years back. And for weeks, pundits were praising him, saying, oh, actually, he's felt the tiniest bit of contact and he's got every right to go down. No, even sort out if you've got contact and you can go down, then yeah, everyone can do it. But as soon as Mane does it and the rest of the league go, Mane does it all the time, you can't do that. No, it shouldn't be one rule for one and another for another. That is completely wrong, in my opinion. And this whole conspiracy against Liverpool players and diving is absolutely ridiculous.
So not a penalty then?
I don't think it is a foul.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's not a dive either.
It's not a dive.
So it's not a yellow card.
It's not a yellow card. It's play on.
Okay.
A big fat advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been so much quicker if you just said that joke. Well, thank you very much.
I know, like,
gotta make content, haven't we?
Yeah. First half performance, quickly whiz through this, Ben. Wasn't great. I think a growing sense of frustration. I think you can always count on Liverpool to create chances. And I put a tweet out at half time and said, oh, well, at least we're getting in the right places. And I was like, oh, what game are you watching? I was like, we're creating chances.
I don't think we were awful. I don't think we were as awful as Twitter were making out. I thought,
we never are.
No, we never are. I thought, we had a lot of the ball, which can cloud things sometimes because we weren't doing loads with it. The midfield was a little bit stagnant. But, I don't know, you've not got too much on the... You've got him there. I thought Trent Alexander-Arnold from minute one to minute 90 was absolutely brilliant. He was so good. In first half, second half, the balls he was putting into the box were unbelievable, and I thought he was the real shining light.
He put 20 crosses in.
Yeah, he was absolutely fantastic. But yeah, I think obviously you go in 1-0 down at half time, you probably get a bit of a kick up the arse, and there was a bit more in the second half. And this is the thing, right? Even when we got to like 10 minutes to go, I still didn't see us losing the game, you know. And that, this is the thing, I've got so much faith in us just doing our thing. I don't know if I saw us winning the game, you know, when we got to 5 minutes to go, but I didn't think we'd lose it. I definitely felt there was an equaliser coming, and there's just that blind faith at the moment. It's fantastic.
Were you aware of the City score at this point as well?
No. Well, people were telling us that City were losing, and then I think, it was just before Robbo had scored. We started pressing, Keita's just come on, and we're like, okay, we're going for this properly now, and we're actually using the right-hand side in a fucking good way. Trent was brilliant, but he needed more help. And then someone went, City are winning 2-1. I think they scored in the 84th, didn't they?
Yeah.
We were like, fuck.
So were we still 1-0 down at that point?
I think so.
Yeah, so my stream, I don't know, obviously you will have had the same frustrations, I imagine, on Saturday, trying to find a stream and stuff.
No, my perfectly legitimate stream was about 30 seconds behind.
I struggled. So basically it was freezing so much, I was probably about 10 minutes behind.
Away, yeah.
So I put my phone away, but I had notifications on for City. Mm. So we were definitely 1-0 down in my world when City went 2-1 up. And then we equalised, and I was kind of like, well, you know, at least we're coming around with a draw.
Exactly.
You know, and we're going to next weekend, there's a 4-point gap and all that, and I'm trying to justify it to myself. And then the second one goes.
the best part about it for me is Robbo scores, and it's a great goal, but there's no celebrating. there's a yes, a palpable sense of relief.
That's the halfway line.
Back in, Daniel let's
James,
go again.
Daniel James would have still been celebrating at the corner flag when we scored our second goal, wouldn't he?
Like
Daniel James, are you?
The fans were going mental, and too right we were, because we've been getting stick all game, and it could have very easily, the players could have ran over and gone yes and save at that moment. But no, they know what we're going for here. We're not after a draw. We don't go after draws anymore. There's a reason we made the substitutions. The substitutions worked. It was brilliant from Klopp, changing on the 60th minute. But the fact that we just went, right, no, we're going for this. Robbo knew it. Robbo doesn't score. And he was like, I'm not celebrating. Doesn't matter. And there's a reason why we sang his name so loudly at the end of the game, because he's the turning point there. He's the one who, like, right, let's go. Everyone back in. Go again. Because we had them on the ropes, and it was... I love seeing Liverpool like that, tails up, going at teams. As soon as we make the changes, I'm sure you'd speak about that, but as soon as we made the changes, we were picking the ball up, turning to face goal and shooting at goal, which is something we just didn't do for 60 minutes. We didn't shoot. Klopp was talking about it in his post-match presser. We just didn't. And then Oxlade-Chamberlain, all right, they all get blocked, but he has four shots in the time that he's on the pitch, and they're all from outside the box. And we're trying to make things happen. We're trying driving at people, shifting into other gears that we know we have, and we just didn't do it. We're speaking to Paul after it. We shifted straight from second to fifth there. We just went bang, everyone go, push everyone up. Don't care. If we get caught on a break, tough luck. We're already losing, but you go for it. And it's something that Liverpool are fantastic at doing now. And I absolutely love watching us do that. Just going, yeah, we're better than yous, and we know it.
There's a couple of things Tom's just covered there. And I think it's important, like half time, whenever Liverpool aren't playing great or, you know, they're struggling or whatever, I can always bank on Klopp saying something at half-time to tactically change something. I don't think he gets enough credit for it, if I'm being perfectly honest. Just to G them up or to get them go again. And equally, obviously, Tom mentioned the substitutions there. And you mentioned it upstairs. It's actually quite early for Klopp to make substitutions within that game. I think he knew we needed a goal.
It was one of them things where, it's like Ben said, I don't think we were awful, but I think we were awful for our standard at the minute. I think the bar is set so high at the minute that people are getting annoyed very easily. And for me, it was like at half-time, I said, the way the game's going, I can tell there's going to be an early substitution here. And I think Klopp was praised as well, because we know he doesn't really like to do substitutions early. We know he likes to leave it a bit later, looking towards the 70th minute sort of stage. But I think for me, against United, his early changes changed the game then. And I think it was the same against Aston Villa. I think the changes were very obviously that they were needed. Mm. But I think they were perfect, and bringing Oxlade-Chamberlain on, I mean, he is perfect. Like, we've spoken loads about how our midfield doesn't like to shoot from distance a lot. We like to sort of, the goals we score tend to be from inside the box. And I think when Oxlade-Chamberlain comes on, you know he's going to have a crack from distance. You know he's going to get the ball. There's that chance when he has not one, not two, but three strikes of the ball, and he's just there all the time. He's having a go, and that's what our midfield lacks at times. And listen, the three of them are brilliant players, but obviously the way Klopp likes them to set up, they have different roles within our side. And I think when Oxlade-Chamberlain comes on, we release him, and it's just like, go on, have a crack. And that gives us a different dimension. And I think once he comes on, it's fantastic, and it's exactly what the game needs at the time. And then obviously we bring in on Keita as well, which gives us a whole new flow. And it's just, like I say, at the minute, there's so many players in the side that you can score and can produce a moment of magic for us. And it's just fantastic, because there wasn't a bit of doubt in my mind watching that game. It's like Ben said, you're watching it and you're going, oh, we're gonna score before the end, because we're having so much of the ball. We've got players that can produce a quality ball, a moment of magic. We've got Ox, who scores brilliant goals. I need to
change my mindset, because I watched that game, and I watched other games that we played this season where we're 1-0 behind or 1-1 and it's late stages. Yeah, I just keep going, this is it. This is the one where we drop points. This is the one where we lose.
I
console myself to it. I'm like, I shouldn't do it, because the players don't fucking do it.
I didn't know. There was that sense of it. Like, I was speaking again to some of the lads around us, and we were just like, we've played badly. Because the amount of games we've played badly in, and we've got away with jammy goals or late goals, and you're thinking, Is that bad football? You know what I mean? I know we're dominating games, but why are we not doing it? But then we do it at the end. And that's the best way to win a game of football, but it's also the worst. I don't know. I'd celebrated it like something. There's a video of me in it, like, on there, just going absolutely mental. I was so exhausted mentally and physically after the first goal. Like, I couldn't even sing after for the second. I was like just in shock. I was just jumping around. That's the goal, isn't it? You love to see, you love celebrating them. But also, I want us to go out there and use that dominance we've got and just win the game. Just do it. Like, our XG, I think their XG was 0.74 and ours was 2.39. So, okay, pretty much 2-1, you know what I mean, I guess. But use them opportunities better. We had some in the first half. Mane could have scored. We had stuff where it was nearly there and it didn't work. But we need to start turning it around. Yes, we're winning these games fantastically and we'll look back on them and be like, what a day, what a game, what a way. The mentality is fantastic. But at the end of the day...
We haven't clicked.
No, we need to be better. We have to be better. We will be better. No doubt about that in my mind. No doubt at all. We'll go out against City, go out against Genk and we'll win the game. We will. But sometimes you've just got to take the game by the scruff of the neck earlier than the fucking 87th minute.
For me, Mane summed it up perfectly at the end because he said... I don't think we thought we could do it, but we didn't give up. And that's what all Liverpool fans think at the minute, because we've got into a situation where, actually, it's like I say, where we may not think like, we may think, oh, this is the game, or we're playing pretty poor today, we don't deserve anything from this. But actually, we have them players that can score, and there always can be a moment of magic. We've got Divock Origi, who can come off the bench and score a 94th minute winner all the time. And Mane, just everyone. I can name every player right now. Which is brilliant.
Yeah. Actually, Chamberlain was mentioned there, Ben. I think he had an immediate effect. And I know hindsight's a wonderful thing, but would you be looking at someone like you would have started in that game?
Potentially. I mean, the thing is, I've not seen... I mean, obviously, he scores the goal against Arsenal in the week, doesn't he? But I've not seen enough of him starting games to really be convinced that... I think he's better as an impact player, you know, I think better coming on and being that little bit of extra energy in the middle of midfield.
Tough for him when he's had such a long injury to
start.
Yeah,
and that is the thing. I think he'll get there and... There's definitely a case for him to start the weekend, I think. You know, you're going into a game against Man City that's going to be high tempo. It's going to suit him. But, you know, is he ready to be thrown into a game of that level and that importance? All these questions are going to be asked this week. But, yeah, I think at the moment I'm comfortable with him being the guy who comes on and injects a bit of energy when we need it. You know, same with Keita. I mean, well, I think the one, if not both, will start tomorrow night against Genk, and we'll see how they do then. Keita, I wasn't impressed by against Arsenal because of the way, you know, that was the type of game really where I expected him to dominate the midfield.
Good to see he's not injured though.
He's not injured. Yeah, I know. That's right. Great to see he's not injured. But again, I expected more from him in the week. But yeah, Chamberlain, I think, you know, the way he comes on, he has that moment, doesn't he, where I think he hits three shots in a row and Mings gets in the way of a couple. And you just see he's willing to try something different. He wants to get that ball in the back of the net. You know, it's something that we don't get from the rest of the midfield. And again, what we've discussed this to death, that's not what the standard midfield is instructed to do. That they've all got the specific jobs and they do the jobs very well. But Chamberlain comes on and it clearly his instructions are shuffle a pack. You know, make them think different. You know, have a different outlook on this game. Try and be a bit more positive and energetic, and we've got an extra dimension then to the midfield, and I think that's that right now. That's what I think his role is in this side, and eventually we'll come to a point where the performances are consistent enough for him to start games and have that kind of impact on a whole game rather than just half an hour. I don't think we're at that stage with him yet.
We'll be at Man City,
maybe.
That's that game for me. Tom, I know you said you don't like talking about it, but obviously whilst we're on Chamberlain. Ben and Jacobo mentioned that there were three shots, he had a quick possession. He also had an opportunity to score, which was blocked by a hand.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think it's hard. I don't want to talk about it, if I'm honest, Ross.
Because
but at the end of the day... At the end of the day, we win the game and it's fine. I'd talk about it more if we wouldn't have got the result.
But pretend that we haven't
I'd
for a second
I'd feel aggrieved. It's tough. It's a handball. In the box, it blocks a shot at goal. It's very close to him. I can see why it's not given. I can see what I want it to be given because I'm biased. If it was me as the defender or if it was Virgil van Dijk as the defender, you know what I mean? I'd be like, all right, that'd be really harsh. But he blocks a shot on goal.
So again, coming back to VAR, you mentioned it upstairs in the office. Man United's was it PSG.
Yeah, where...
It makes himself bigger.
Makes himself bigger, blocks the goal.
Why is that not? I think consistency is the problem with this again.
Yeah.
You know, Jack, by the letter of the law, you'll be able to tell us.
But they need to have a distance then. If it's too close, what is too close? Make it binary.
But
just keep making it binary.
But then you're going to have the implication of it has to be if it's any more than 10 miles an hour, because then you've got...
Yeah, no, give me that rule. Give me that, Ross. Give me the numbers so I know.
Thing is,
you know what I mean?
Realistically, they say too close because before VAR, obviously it's the eyesight of a ref, so a ref isn't going to be able to go, well, that was exactly 3 metres away, so therefore we can't give it. But now, actually, with VAR, they could bring that law
in. That's what I mean, do it.
Because, actually, you can measure the distance now, so if they wanted to, they obviously could bring that in, but they won't because, again, if they don't give something and VAR doesn't check it, it would be us slagging them off again.
So, but if Chamberlain hits that ball, and for example, it hits Manny in the hand and then Manny scores, then it's handball.
It's handball,
but it's not if it's
a
defender.
Yeah.
But it is, if it's a defender, they got it wrong.
And I think
why?
But, they got it wrong, Ross.
No, the new law is the attacker, and that's where it's a load of bollocks because, as you say, it's like, why is that the case? I didn't think it was a penalty purely based on the distance. But again, obviously I'm a Liverpool fan, so I wanted it to be given. But again, if it wasn't a Liverpool game, I'd be saying, oh, it's unnatural. I could see why it's given. But then I think it's one of them where it's 50-50 because you look at the distance, you look at how Oxlade-Chamberlain's hit it, and as you said, you can see why it's not given. But at the same time, it's consistently inconsistent, isn't it?
And if that happened in seven aside, it hit me hand, I'd be like, yeah, it's a pen there. I'm being serious. I'd be like, I've just blocked the goal. Yeah. Obviously, it's Premier League. It's different. You're not going to own up to
is
it.
Is your seven-a-side not the standard of a Premier League?
No, I mean, we no.
If you look at the one Everton didn't get yesterday, yeah. I mean, that was clear.
That was the worst one of the weekend. And again, so talk about the screens. Mm-hmm. That was one where, for me, Miles Acton looks at that, he gives that penalty.
100%.
So why isn't he looking at that one? That was the worst one of
the weekend. Because he's a prick, Ben. That's why.
He's not being told. Okay.
I'm sick of it. Fucking VAR's bollocks.
A final thing before we wrap up. Regardless of the City result, that's a massive 3 points going into the City game and to be 6 points clear, Ben.
Yeah. Again, as I said before, you know, I was just starting to justify a 4-point gap. Oh, a 4-point gap's healthy, you know. Yeah, that's fine. You know, we beat them. It's 7 points, and you know, we can do that. No. Not for these Reds. Not for these Reds. They are just so. Again, and I feel like I say this every single game. We just found another way to win. Like I keep thinking we're gonna run out. And we don't. We just keep on winning. And actually, to be honest, this was the first weekend where I was convinced that we were going to get something out of the game. You know, you were saying before, oh, maybe this is the one we lose. I didn't think we were going to lose the game. Man United was the one where I think around 83 minutes, I went, I can't believe we're going to lose this because we just had so much of the ball. But this week, I was like, nah, I feel like it's only a matter of time. I messaged me mate. I was saying, no, this does genuinely feel like we're gonna break through here. But yeah, going into that game, what a boost for the squad. Again, you know, another one going into that City game. We should do the job tomorrow night, you know, trying to take that game out of the equation tomorrow just for a second. They've got back into the dressing room there, they'll have been absolutely buzzing because they'll have seen in the like obviously the City have done it as well. And look, you know, there's all kind of mind games going on at the moment with Guardiola and the way he's talking about Liverpool and all that. The lads will be absolutely delighted with the way that they're winding other people up at the moment. Van Dijk's coming over and he's doing all of this. They know how good they are. And to get another late win like that, they'll go into next weekend absolutely bouncing, and Anfield's going to be unbelievable.
Yeah. The one player that we haven't mentioned, who I don't think had a great game, but he actually wins the game for us by stepping up, is Sadio Mane, Tom. Absolutely incredible. Again, just to obviously get the assist for Robbo.
Goal?
Yeah.
What a header? How does he get that in?
And he gets kicked in the face as well while he does it.
But we were talking upstairs before. So that short corner, which I know is a lot of frustrating for a lot of people, the fact that we always hit the first man. We've seen signs of aiming for that first person. It's normally Mane.
We do it all the time. On the front post. And Mane, there's times when he flicks it on. I remember it was a few seasons ago in the Champions League group stages when we just kept doing it. Just kept flicking the ball on. And I think, or maybe we flicked the ball on and Mane scored like a bit of header that he curved and stuff. But on Mane, I think he's a special player. He really is, because he's the one who scores early goals for us. He gets goals. He's the one who's creating all the goals this season. But I remember I was looking into it because he did it last season and he's been doing it this season. It's that first goal. It's opening teams up. You get that first goal, that's when the teams have to come out, and that's when Liverpool are so good.
And we've been conceding early goals recently, so we haven't seen too much of it. But that's what Liverpool do. We score an early goal, they come out, and we score more. And Sadio Mane is integral to that because he's the one who kicks it off. He's the one who creates stuff constantly. He's the one who's diving. Yeah, he's diving to get us opportunities. Think about Leicester. Think about the tenacity to get in there and to get his body, put it on the line, put his body on the line again by getting kicked in the head. But he wills that ball in. And not many players score that goal. That's a fantastic header, that. One of the best. Like, I remember Luis Garcia scoring one back in the day where he like flicks it from the edge of the box. It's comparable to that. I know it's not as good as that, but I enjoyed it just as much as that one.
My mate's a City fan and he thinks Mane should win the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just fantastic. And you mentioned special players. We've got a team full of special players at the minute, but it's like you say, Mane's always the one to pop up. He's always that one that you can rely on every week. Ben said it earlier as well. He stepped his game up so much. I think when Salah first came and he was scoring all them goals, breaking records, people were quick to criticise Mane and all sorts. But I think then Mane stepped his game up, and since then he's not looked back. And he's just absolutely phenomenal. And you know what? I think no one would be able to complain if Mane wins Ballon d'Or because...
Oh, it's Virgil van Dijk, mate.
I think
it's them where you could have five or six players in our team that win the Ballon d'Or. We're that fucking good.
Yeah,
it's one of them things. And I mean, at the minute, probably Mane, yeah. But it's like you say, any of our team could.
What a lovely position to be in, isn't it? Under being able to have players, you should be in the Ballon d'Or.
I haven't been disappointed from watching Liverpool for so long, and my mood is so linked to football.
I know,
if Liverpool lose, I'm gutted until the next game. Like, there's no
weekend, doesn't it?
No, it does. No, it affects my whole outlook on life, and I am so happy right now. And literally, I find myself smiling.
Does that not make
moment.
It worse when if we eventually do lose a game?
But then I'll know that we'll just start
that's
winning
the
again.
You pay.
So it doesn't matter. Yeah, that's
just
the thing.
I'll just not talk to you that day.
Well, we can. No, genuinely don't. I'll be fuming if we lose it. If we lose against Genk, lose against City, any games in the future, I'll be gutted. But I'll also know that we can turn it on and we can just come back. And the feeling that is around this football club right now is one of the best I've ever felt in my life. There's literally nothing bad that can be said at the moment. And I just find myself smiling. When you were talking about the game, I'm smiling about VAR being shit because I know it doesn't matter because we're that good. I'm smiling when you're talking about how the mentality. I just find myself beaming. I'm in the car and I'm just like, Liverpool are good, aren't we? It's honestly fantastic.
Good job you don't support Everton, isn't it?
Speaking
of fixtures across the weekend, we'll do more in depth on the Around the League podcast, which will be up on the website tomorrow morning. City 1-2-1, we've already mentioned. Arsenal Wolves 1-1. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone at this point of the season, is it?
No, it's mad. Arsenal are a bit up and down, or very up and down, obviously, because you know, we've had the discussion. They're fifth, but I can't really remember the last time they won. So I don't know, is the rest of the league that bad? Or, Tottenham and Everton are way off, Man United are way off as well. You've not got Man United in there, but they lost again, everybody. Hey. So, you know, it's a mad league at the moment.
Because they
lost to Bournemouth.
They're not even rivals. That's why. Chelsea beat Watford 2-1. The other one that's not on there, again, which we'll go in depth on around the league, is Leicester. One again, like Leicester.
Yeah.
Leicester, Brendan Rodgers creeping up there.
They've got a great side. Yeah.
Wicked, thank you very much for joining me, Ben, Tom and Jack. That's been the final word for Aston Villa. Aston Villa 1, Liverpool 2. We'll be back for the build-up for the Genk game, which is a quick turnaround as we play tomorrow night. Don't forget to go and check out The Athletic, www.theathletic.co.uk/RedmenTV to get your 50% off your yearly subscription and a 30-day free trial, and we'll see you soon. Ta-ra.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.